Fixing hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FU commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN.
I'm Ryan Lambert from Yahoo.
Hey, Sean McAdoo from The Athletic.
And you're in Puck Soup. Now, I am doing this podcast taking valuable time away from my regular job, which is to piece together the plot of Avengers Endgame through the 30 seconds of footage that we've seen so far. So I hope that you guys appreciate my sacrifice.
Are you talking to me? I don't care. Maybe the listeners... I'm trying to avoid spoilers, Greg. I don't understand
My curiosity gets the best of me sometimes.
Can't
because,
do it.
Like, the best example of that might be. Remember Prometheus. Who can forget Prometheus?
It was good.
The run up to Prometheus for me was the most exciting run up for any movie ever because I scoured the internet to try to piece together what the plot of the movie was, and the. Joy of exploration. I was like Nick Cage in National Treasure, jumping from clue to clue, piecing together the mystery, and then I finally saw the movie. And it fucking sucked.
No,
but
it didn't. It was good.
The run up to the movie was super exciting. So I find myself doing the same thing now with Endgame, where you know, the bits and pieces that we're getting from the trailers. What color is Black Widow's hair from scene to scene? When does this scene take place? When do they fight Thanos? All of it to me is fascinating. And will ultimately lead to me creating a better movie in my head than the movie I'll probably end up seeing.
You guys, I have a theory about how that movie's going
to
go. You want to hear my theory?
I've got a theory.
I think some of the dead characters might come back to life.
I don't know. I don't know.
I know that would be really crazy for a comic book movie, but I got a sense that the characters who are the tentpoles in billion-dollar movie franchises may not actually be permanently dead.
This is an interesting theory because I understand my moles tell me my Ain't It Cool News spies tell me that there is another Spider-Man movie coming out this year.
Yeah,
and it does take place.
My theory might be
after
right.
The events.
Must credit Sean McAdoo.
Well, if it's Ain't It Cool News, Sean, then you need to have a cool code name like Moriarty or Quint.
Okay.
So what would be your Ain't It Cool News spy code
name? I'll have to see if I can think of a movie related reference. That might take me a while.
Do you know what? I know there's only five you can go with, but you know what? One of the things I always wanted to do as far as like projects that I was just always too lazy to actually pull off. There was a movie set I used to go to a lot when I was in college called Corona Coming Attractions. Do you remember that site, Lambert, or no?
Nope.
Okay. So what it was a compendium of different rumors about movies leading up to their release. So you could go to like, Avengers Endgame page, and it would be like the first rumor would be after the release of the last Avengers movie, and it would take you all the way through, and it was like reports from readers and reports from screenings and all this other shit. It was fascinating. My idea was to jump back in time and do like a fake page for The Empire Strikes Back and do sort of a think piece webpage where you're tracking the rumors of The Empire Strikes Back, and at one point it's like, one of my spies is telling me that they're going to reveal that Darth Vader is Luke's father. And then just do like the whole feedback to that. Sort of like your real-time internet reaction to a historic thing was my idea.
Well, so this is my problem with spoilers, right? Because if you go into Empire Strikes Back knowing that Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father, the whole movie's kind of like isn't as fun. So... this is what, like, I try not to even watch trailers for this exact reason. Because you're just ruining it for yourself, and then you're like, well, it sucked. And it's like, well, I mean, if you didn't know what the ending was 2 months in advance or whatever, yeah, you might have liked it more.
Just my theory. I will put this caveat in. What if the ending blows, and you are aware of that going in? And maybe you appreciate, you know, think of like a shitty Shyamalan movie. Think of like The Village, right? Like if you know what the twist of The Village is going in, there's a chance that your enjoyment of the movie will not be there. But there's also a chance that you might be more entertained by the breadcrumbs along the way that maybe lead to the ending.
Well, it's funny you pick The Village, because that was a movie where I figured it out, I'm going to say 10 minutes in.
Yeah.
Into the credits.
I honestly think that might be the only twist movie I have ever figured out. I'm terrible at it, and like 10 minutes into that one, I was like, oh, okay. In fact, I convinced myself that the twist was going to be that they weren't going to do that twist, because it was being set up so obviously. This was like a level two type situation. And
right. Yeah. I think it was when Elder Smith was wearing Nikes during that one scene in the beginning. That was the by the way, I remember also, speaking of movie rumors, I remember there being an early review of that movie or of the script where when Bryce Dallas Howard steps out into the real world, she's almost hit by a truck or something.
Yeah.
Is what happens. And then allegedly in the script, the truck was driven by a black gentleman who sticks his head out the window and says, "Goddamn white people." And then drives away. Legit rumor that was on the internet before The Village came out.
I wish that was in the movie. It would have been better.
All right. Listen, you guys are listening to a hockey podcast, allegedly, so we should probably talk about hockey. The playoffs are nearly here. The seedings are almost set. RIP Minnesota Wild. RIP probably Arizona Coyotes, although I guess technically they're still alive right now.
They
as
are.
We do this podcast.
Yep.
On life support. The only thing that's not settled as we do this podcast is the Eastern Conference wild card, with the Hurricanes and the Canadiens and the Blue Jackets doing everything they can to not get in. No predictions on how it's going to shake out. I mean, by the time people listen to this, it'll probably be settled. But I think
Montreal and Columbus can't be settled for sure until Saturday night. Yeah.
Okay.
Because Columbus doesn't even play until Friday, so we do have some time.
We're in the clear. Well, I think Columbus is still going to make it, even though they fucking shit the bed at home against the Bruins in a giant. Why doesn't John Tortorella ever get any criticism, like widespread criticism, for coaching his teams to the bubble every year and then losing games like that where his team comes out and lays a giant shit burger?
Isn't this like the third time we've brought it up on this podcast alone?
Why are we the lone voices in the wilderness on John Tortorella
because
being
we're
a shitty
smart.
Coach? Okay.
That's it. No mystery.
I feel bad for imagine being a Blue Jackets fan. I know.
No thanks.
I know. Imagine you're a member of the fifth line and your team goes all into the trade deadline. You get the bell of the ball of Matt Duchene, you get Ryan Dzingel to come home, you know, you get Adam McQuaid, and then your team you're like, oh, this is great, we're finally going for it, blah 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 blah, and then you lose a game like that on home ice in a must-win playoff like situation.
Yeah, but I mean, the Bruins are so much better than them, so you can't you can't be like, oh, I can't believe the Boston Bruins beat. If you lose to like Montreal or something, where you go, okay, I mean, that could have been a close game, or you lose to Ottawa, that's mm-hmm. different. But if you lose to the Bruins, you just go, damn, the Bruins are great. They're the second best team in the league this year.
There's a part of me that I mean, I want the Blue Jackets in the playoffs because I want fortune to favor the bold, as I've said many times before. There is a part of me that thinks that a Montreal-Tampa series might be more entertaining
mm-hmm.
than a Columbus waxing. Do you agree with that?
I think both could be good, but I think a Montreal-Tampa series would be potentially a lot more entertaining than people think. I think everyone would just chalk it up as, you know, four game sweep, easy speed bump for Tampa.
Oh yeah.
And I'm just saying, if I'm Tampa or I'm a Tampa fan, I don't really want to see Carey Price in the first round.
I'd much rather deal with Sergei Bobrovsky in the first round.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't feel like getting 45 shots every game, and suddenly it's, you know, we lose game one 2-1, and we're halfway through game two, and it's 1-0 for Montreal, and we're kind of going, is this actually happening? And, you know, Carey Price scares me if I'm anyone, but especially if I'm a team that knows I'm going to be the favorite over everyone.
Now, this Carey Price fellow, does he have the greatest Canadian players ever to be born in Canada playing in front of him during this series? Or is it just a normal series? Because he's usually really good when he has literally the best players on earth playing in front of him.
It's not like he's ever won like an MVP or a Vezina without Team Canada in front of him. He's good. He's good, Greg.
Yeah,
he's no Jaro Halak, I'll tell you that.
He's pretty good.
Oh. That's true.
I want to see Brendan Gallagher in a series against the Lightning.
Yeah, Brendan Gallagher. I just read the other day, like, he's one of the best expected goals generators.
Yeah.
In recent history, like, that's crazy to me. But he's good. He's very
underrated. And also,
underrated players, by the way. Brendan Gallagher is extremely one of them.
And also a total shitheel.
Yeah.
So I think that'd be fun too.
Also good.
And you know Shea Weber will do some fucking murder-saurus bullshit like he did against Zetterberg that one year where he's bouncing Braden Point's head off the glass 15 times then not getting a suspension.
That was so
like,
cool.
I think Montreal's got more guys on their team that to me would do the dirty with Tampa than does Columbus. And that's why I'm kind of intrigued by that series.
Yeah. On the other hand, I think the Columbus Tampa series could get pretty wide open and fun.
Yeah.
So
both of those series are going to be good. And the nice thing is, like, because they can't clinch anything until Saturday, Saturday's going to be great. Cause I mean, you got Toronto and Montreal in a game that's going to matter, which will be fantastic. And also, by the way, Bob Cole's final game, if you needed a little bit extra to get you tuned in for that. And you got Columbus in Ottawa, which I love. I love the Ottawa Senators having a chance to be the team that denies Matt Duchene.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so perfect, even though Columbus probably win that game 7-0 because the Senators are already on the bus on the way to the airport. Well, but
not for nothing, but Ottawa's been playing really well. And like and scoring a lot of goals and stuff, like to the point where we did a coaching hot seat thing on ESPN this week and like there's a legitimate chance that Mark Crawford could get that job. Like, I still think it's going to go to Troy Mann, but like, there's a chance he gets that job because they've actually played that well down the stretch.
Let me ask you this, and this is, I think, what's going to really determine it: who's going to be cheaper, Greg?
Yeah.
That's
who has the healthiest and most easily removable liver is the question, obviously, for the next Ottawa head coach. That's a good point. And obviously the AHL guy would be cheaper than Crawford. Although, I don't know. I was thinking about that. Like, is Crawford the guy who's been out of work for like 6 years? So basically it's like, well, all we have, sir, is a position in our mailroom. He's like, I'll take it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, is he that
That's
guy?
That's what I was thinking.
Well, or the other thing guy. Is, and I don't actually know this, but what's his contract status? I assume he's up this year because Guy Boucher was, but if he's got a deal that already extends and they already have to pay him, I don't know. That would be a tough sell in Ottawa. In a town that really, really wants to see some change, I think going like, hey, we're going to keep the guy who was the assistant for the last few years is potentially tough. But God forbid, you know, the Senators are a pretty PR-savvy organization, so I don't think...
That's exactly right.
That's right. Well, you'll know exactly what's going on if Jeff6969 Alfredson is tweeting, Crawford might be the best coach in the NHL.
Good job, Mr.
Our Mike. Organization, capital O's. Yeah. So
hey, listen, before we get back to playoff people, we might as well pause on coaches. LA obviously making a change. Anaheim obviously making a change. I think the Flyers are definitely making a change. I don't think Gordon gets that job. Do you? And by the way, I heard from a couple people this week in doing that story that McClellan might be somebody to watch for Philly if it's not Quenneville. Do you think that Boudreau is back? Mike Russo in The Athletic said that Craig Leopold would want him back, but it's Fenton's team, and Dean Evason might be Fenton's guy, and Bruce has one more year left at like $3 million. Do you think he comes back, considering how the Wild missed?
Well, he doesn't think he's coming back. He had that quote the other day, or last week, about, it sucks, I'm not going to get to coach Ryan Donato much longer, or something like that. And it's like, well, he just came out and said it. Like, that's a spoiler alert, I guess. But yeah, no, I kind of think they don't bring him back because of the thing about he's not Fenton's guy, and he only has 1 year left or whatever. Maybe they promote him up. I don't know, but
yeah, my thing with him is, again, working under my theory that every GM is primarily concerned with their own job security and not necessarily what's best for their team. I could see, if I'm Paul Fenton and I look where this team's going, that might be a card I want to keep in my pocket for another year, knowing that as soon as I make the coaching change now, you know, I'm not the new guy anymore. Now the spotlight's on me. If I was purely focused on kind of covering my own behind, I might make the owner happy, keep the guy, know he's going to be gone next year unless he pulls off a miracle. And then, you know, for a lot of fans and media, the clock only really starts ticking on a GM once he's had a chance to name his own coach. So I might want to hold off on doing that.
I don't hate that idea. By the way, for the record, the only time a coach gets bumped up into a higher part of the organization is if he wins a cup. If you win a cup, then you just become a consultant until someone takes your contract off the books. So, although I do like the idea of like Bruce Boudreau becoming like head of arena concessions after his coaching tenure is done. Okay, so that's a Minnesota Edmonton. So. I mean, like, Hitchcock's done whatever with that bullshit team, and there's an argument to be made for consistency behind the bench versus hitting the complete reset button, like, twice in the span of a year. But what do you think happens there, and do you think it's just simply contingent on who the next GM is?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. If it's, I don't know, let's just pick a name at random. A guy on the 1985 Oilers.
Peter Klima or...
Like, just pick one. It doesn't matter who. I bet they don't make a change because they just... Ken Hitchcock, he's a respected old-timey hockey guy, blah, blah, blah. And you say... Well, you know, it's not his fault. The team was so bad. It was Peter Chiarelli's fault. And by the way, Peter Chiarelli didn't play for the Oilers in the 80s. I'm just saying.
That's true.
Whereas if they bring in somebody who's actually going to be good at this job, I think they might make a change.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, the first question is, does Ken Hitchcock even want to do this for another year? Because there have certainly been times this season where he has seemed like a guy who was – really done with this whole team. If he wants, I don't know. The issue I have, I agree with you guys. I don't think Ken Hitchcock is the problem in Edmonton. I think you'd have to go way down a list of issues before you'd get to his name for that team. But is he going to be your long term guy? Is he going to be the guy for the next 5 years? I don't think so.
No.
So if he's going to stick around for one more year, I mean, you talked about. The lack of consistency and the, you know, constant changes. I mean, if you're going to change in a year anyways, I might want to just do it now, kind of roll this whole season was a write-off. We changed everything. The whole season was a mess. Let's be fresh going forward and not be going in to another year going, oh, by the way, Connor, you're going to need a new coach in a year. But that's, I mean, honestly, that's what I just do is I just ask Connor McDavid at the end of the year, what do you want us to do?
And
that's what I do, because there isn't any priority for this team that's more important than having this guy not continually looking like he's in a hostage video every time he's interviewed anywhere.
So who's Erie's coach at this moment? by the way, if Hitchcock isn't the long-term solution, hear me out. You keep him for another year. You hire someone like, I don't know, Mike Yeo, and put him on the bench, have him learn the ropes.
Okay, I'm listening.
And then that way he'll be ready to be the coach you need when Hitchcock's time is up.
Yep.
Doesn't that make a lot of sense?
No, that's perfect. I love it.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Blues, why doesn't Craig Berube have a new contract?
It doesn't make sense.
Yep.
Unless Doug Armstrong's got some like fucking side table deal with Quenneville. Like, there's no reason why he shouldn't have a contract.
Correct.
Yeah, as the owner of the world's only Toronto Maple Leafs Craig Berube jersey, I'm firmly on Team Craig, and yeah, I mean, I don't, unless there is some behind the scenes thing we don't know about, I don't know how you, as a GM, tell young players, you know, you got to jump up and grab the reins and take advantage of your opportunity, and have a coach come in and do exactly that, and then go, yeah, but not you. Can you chat me up?
What was Craig Berube's legacy in Toronto? I remember him as a Flyer.
Yep.
Craig, what did he do in
Toronto? Craig Berube came over to the Leafs in the Grant Fear trade in 1991, the 1991 offseason. He, in the first few months, did what you would expect a guy like Craig Berube to do in the Norris Division. Had a couple of bouts with Bob Probert, a few other guys like that. Basically, was the Leafs' enforcer in an era where every team needed to have guys like that.
Oh yeah.
Me being a kid who really enjoyed and appreciated that part of the game, I asked for a Craig Berube jersey for Christmas. I received it. I wore it for the first time on the day after New Year's in 1992. Went downtown Toronto with my friends. Felt very proud because I noticed people were looking at me and pointing at my jersey. And then I got home to be informed that Craig Berube had been traded to the Calgary Flames as part of the Doug Gilmore 10-player trade. So, yeah, I still have the jersey to this day, but I wore it exactly once when Craig Berube was actually a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Unreal.
Well, that's awesome. You and my daughter should talk about her Ben Lovejoy jersey one day then, I suppose, and the legacy of that sweater.
We might be able to work out a trade.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think he should come back unless, obviously, if Quenneville wants to come back to St. Louis, there's a conversation worth having. But that'd be – I wonder what the players would think about that. Like, here's a guy who came in, rescued the season. Yeah, Bennington helped. But then he gets like, dicked over, pushed to the side for another dude. That'd be interesting. But, again, it's for – if it was for Quenneville, I'm sure the Blues guys were like, we understand. Bob Bugner in Florida, what say you? Do you think he's going to survive this, or do you think that – is that another Quenneville-influenced kind of decision?
Well, the Panthers, I would say, have played fairly well and been doomed by poor goaltending.
Correct.
You can definitely say that betting on 58-year-old Roberto Luongo and – I don't know how old James Reimer is, but he's James Reimer.
Come on.
To be your goalie.
Steve Dangle weeps somewhere out there.
Oh, that's too bad. You hate to hear it. And, you know, it's one of those things of – he was definitely torpedoed by that a little bit. But with that having been said, he also used Roberto Luongo in a way that was detrimental to both Roberto Luongo and the team because he was playing him – kind of a lot, 2 and 3 games often, and it's like, well, he's 39 years old. And I can't remember the stat off the top of my head now, but it was pointed out to me at some point in the year that, like, Roberto Luongo on 2 days rest was like a 925 goalie, and Roberto Luongo on less than that was like 880 or something like that.
He's old.
He's very old. And so,
yes.
You know, if you're Bob Bugner and you manage his minutes better, maybe you're not getting your ass fired this summer, which you definitely will, but, you know, that's life.
Yeah. I mean, the Florida Panthers are a team that is just absolutely screaming to anyone that will listen that they want to make big changes in the offseason, and I can't imagine that doesn't involve a coach unless they just don't get the guys that they're looking for. You know, if Dale Talon's sitting there thinking, my old buddy Joel Quenneville will certainly want to come to Florida, and Joel Quenneville decides he wants to go somewhere else, then yeah, maybe you end up coming back to your guy. But I can't imagine that's the plan right now.
If you're Joel, I still think Quenneville should go to Florida. Like, if you're Joel Quenneville, you're like, I won 3 Stanley Cups with the Chicago Blackhawks. This team's made the playoffs 2 times in the last dozen years. Easy bar to clear. If I'm Quenneville, like, why not do that? The thing about Bugner, though, like Ryan said, that if it is a situation where they diagnose it to the goaltending, and now all of a sudden Sergei Bobrovsky's your goalie, like, maybe you give him a bit of a run. I mean, he did come within a point of making the playoffs last year, and
that was because Luongo was like 928 or something like that. He was insanely good last year, and. Okay. You know, if you want to say the average of those two, and like that was so they came within a point when their goalie was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Goalie's terrible this year. They're not even close. They got eliminated like a week ago or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, if you assume you're going to get average goaltending, you're missing the playoffs by 2 or 3 points with this guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other piece of it is I would assume that they will want a new coach in place prior to July 1. So when they're going out to these free agents, they're sitting there, you know, it's I think easier to sell players on a team that doesn't make the playoffs very often if you've got Joel Quenneville or his, you know, his off-brand equivalent somewhere else and not somebody
who's... Let me give you this Sophie's choice. Quenneville wants to come coach the team. Panarin says, I hated playing for Quenneville. I won't sign with you. And I won't bring my friend Bob there either if Quenneville's the coach.
Greg, they can't talk to him until the last week of June. So that would be tampering. So it's a non-starter.
Join us next week for another edition of Pollyanna Soup.
You listen to the players and not the players, elite players, more important than coaches. I would definitely factor that into my decision.
Baba Bugner. It's the best Borat coach's name, I think, currently. By the way, every time I see Barbara Bush trending, without question, say it in the Borat voice in my head. I don't know about you boys. Phil Housley, Barbara Bush. Phil Housley, what's going to happen with this guy? So the Sabres have played like absolute dog shit, 18-3 down the stretch. And yet I kind of believe it's going to be one of those he comes back with a short leash type deals instead of them once again hitting the reset button.
Yep.
A lot of the same logic that Sean had about Fenton, like the minute Botterill pulls the trigger on Housley, well, now all of a sudden his clock is up because he's going to get another guy in there and it's going to be his second hire.
Yeah. The one difference I would in this situation is ownership. I think Buffalo ownership is a lot less patient than they might be in Minnesota.
Leopold, yeah.
I think that, you know, if Jason Botterill says, I'm going to keep the card in my pocket, it might be a case where everyone's seat is hot no matter what, because that fan base is not happy right now, rightly so. And I think it's going to be a very tough sell to bring back Phil Housley and expect there to be a lot of excitement going into the season. And I mean, we've seen that organization cash out the coach and the GM at the same time before. So I wouldn't, if I'm Jason Botterill, I'm not feeling as confident in my game theory of holding on my coaching card. I might feel like I need to play that sooner rather than later.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I think it was Elliot this week, but definitely somebody reported it doesn't seem likely that Buffalo is going to make that change right now because mm-hmm. everybody kind of understands that it's more of a roster problem where they just don't have anybody in the bottom two and a half forward lines and the bottom two D pairs mm-hmm. who's going to make a difference. I think Housley is bad as a coach despite that. I think that is an in addition to problem as opposed to just one or the other. But, you know, I don't know how it's going to go because that organization, like you'd be wise to not try to predict what the Pegulas are going to do.
What the Pegulas
sure.
are going to do, yeah. And it was Elliot, by the way. I believe it was thoughts 8-12.
Okay.
You know, some seats are hot and some seats are cold.
Oh boy.
But the point is, boys,
this is okay. This is fine.
You gotta have a seat.
This is like a bee.
And the way you get it with your friends at SeatGeek, you know. I really feel like maybe you should grade these after I get done with the read because it really starts to trip me up.
It's the transition, though. You got to grade the transition at the time.
But if you give me like a C- at the beginning of the read, the rest of the read's going to be pretty fucking shitty. Or maybe it motivates me to be better.
That's what I was about to say. I'm actually doing good coaching right now.
You are the John Tortorella of SeatGeek ad reads. Thank you so much. You know, the ticket industry hasn't changed in a long time. It was very Jiminy Glick. There are a bunch of big companies that have been around forever, and I don't really care about making the experience easier for the customer. Well, with more than 50,000 five-star reviews, it's like their puck soup. In the App Store, SeatGeek is focused on making your experience as easy as possible. SeatGeek pulls millions of tickets from all over the web, the World Wide Web, and rates each deal on a scale of 1 to 10. One, I'm assuming, being a bad deal, and displays them on an interactive seat map, so it's simple to find what you're looking for. The aforementioned, many mentioned times on this podcast, big green circles. The green dots are good deals, the red dots are overpriced, plus every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. I've got the app on my phone. I use it all the time for any kind of ticket that I need for an event that is either sold out or I want to get a better seat than the ones that are available. It is my go-to place, and I'm very, very happy whenever I see people in the Puck Soup audience using it too. Best of all, listeners to this dumb podcast get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase when you use our promo code. That's SOUP, S-O-U-P, that spells soup. You can use that for concert tickets, sports, comedy, Broadway, whatever you want. SeatGeek supports our show, and so go support them. Remember, that's promo code SOUP, S-O-U-P, for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Download the app today, use the promo code, and they get that deal done. All right, we have two reindeer games on the podcast today. The first being playoff related, Ryan Lambert, take it away.
All right, so this is an idea I have shamelessly stolen from the no longer existing college hockey website, Inside College Hockey. Mm-hmm. And what they would do is, at the beginning of every NCAA tournament, they would draft players from other teams onto the 16 teams that made the tournament. So we're just going to do the same thing with the 16 teams making the NHL playoffs.
So we are taking one player from each eliminated team.
Doesn't have to be each.
Okay.
And it doesn't have to be
from
one
any
player,
eliminated
right?
team.
It can be.
Right. So, like, got the entire for draft example, pool. Dreisaitl and McDavid could totally get taken from Ottawa or from Edmonton. Sorry, Oilers fans. And and you don't have to take anybody from the Kings if you don't want to or whatever.
And and sometimes this is going to be best player available, and sometimes it's going to be
by
drafting
need.
For need.
Yep.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
So,
all right.
Sean, I'll give you a choice here. Do you want to draft for either Arizona or Colorado, as in, like, you can say Colorado would take so-and-so and Arizona would take so-and-so, or do we want to break it up so that, like, I draft for Arizona and so on and so forth?
I don't know how – I mean, I think it's probably the
it's gonna be Colorado.
Same player. Yeah, Colorado, I think, is in – So I'm
and, oh,
and just,
okay, so we're
I think,
just,
and let's
hold,
just go
hold
ahead
on, just,
and say Colorado.
Just for clarity's sake, this is simply a rent-a-player for the postseason,
yes,
right? They don't keep
correct.
Them beyond the season. They're returned from the teams on which they play after the postseason.
That's correct. And okay. So I guess let's get to it now. Sean, I also okay. have you drafting for either or Montreal, Columbus. Do we want to pick one player for each, or do we want to pick – like, I agree that Colorado is probably in, but – not so much certainty around Columbus and Montreal.
Yeah, that one we probably should do one
separate.
Each.
Got it.
Yeah, I'll do them separate.
No problem. Separate,
so equal. I do. I have the first overall pick.
You do,
and I'm Colorado. So what I did with this is I look at Colorado. I really think what jumps out at me is the second pair on the blue line. So what? I'm kidding. Connor McDavid is the pick.
It's kind of weird that Colorado has the first overall pick in this draft and other drafts. Most likely.
Interesting. A little practice for you Avalanche fans. Yes, I will take Connor McDavid. Heard good things about this kid.
Yeah, think must be pretty good.
Yeah, think he and yeah, I'm sure. And also, I just want to see the look on his face when it's explained to him now, that he has to go back.
Now, before you cement this pick, what do we do about ice time? There's only one puck. Is Nathan MacKinnon getting more ice time than Connor McDavid? That would be sort of disadvantageous to this team. One assumes you'd want to give Connor as much ice time as possible. Would there be a rift in the Colorado room if all of a sudden this interloper was getting more ice time than Nathan MacKinnon?
I think everybody in the world
brain.
Is like, yeah, exactly. I think everybody in the world is going, oh yeah, it's Connor McDavid. That's fine.
200 hockey men, even of them, I think about 190 are on Team Connor here.
200 hockey men. All right, Ryan.
For the Dallas Stars, we're going in reverse order of points as of this recording. For the Dallas Stars, I'm going to really try to round out that forward depth. I'm going to add Patrick Kane to their lineup.
I like it.
Now, why is the so that's so who's he playing with on the Stars? Is it a Sagan Kane father's hide your daughter's line or what?
Well,
who's he playing with?
You know what? I think you kind of have to put him on the top line, and then you can bump down Jamie Benn, and that's fine because I don't think Ben's had a great season. So
yeah, I was going to say it. I mean, it is 2019, and one is Patrick Kane, and one is Jamie Benn.
Right.
So it would make sense that Ben would get knocked down.
So
right,
Jamie
is,
Benn's going
okay.
down. That's what we're saying.
Yes!
Just want to make sure.
It is. Swish. Got him.
I'm like John Stockton. I just threw the ball up in the air. I'm hoping Malone's there. And Malone ended up being there. It's great. All right. The Vegas Golden Knights for me. I think the Golden Knights are clearly one. They have one deficiency on their roster, and that is the lack of that foundational franchise defenseman that one needs in order to be victorious. I like this pick a lot because this guy is such a sullen, sad little monkey recently that I think being on a championship-level team would reinvigorate him. I'm putting the dastardly Drew Doughty of the Los Angeles Kings on the blue line of your Vegas Golden Knights.
Oh, that keeps him in the Pacific, too, where he's got all these feuds going. That's good. Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yes.
And he's and you playoff experience, and, cup winner.
And they can play that quote that they love so much. He can. They can actually make him read it. Yeah. About how, like, the Knights won't be here at the end kind of thing.
Yeah, it's going to be like in, what was it? I think it was Goon 2, where the villain of the team ended up on the team. I know I'm making a Goon 2 reference, and God bless Jay Baruchel, but it may not be the one that people really understand and go, you know the movie by heart. But yeah, it'd be Drew Doughty walking through that door, and everybody slowly getting up off the benches and dropping their sticks in awe, and he's just like, "What's up, fuckers?" And then and then we go from there.
I like it. One thing I found with this is, and I'm kind of happy you took Doughty, because I wasn't sure where to slot him in, because I find, like, the blue line depth is not great here. And I don't know, maybe that maybe says something about what's still important as far as making the playoffs. Cause you go down the list of, you know, there's not a lot of, like, Norris contenders who aren't making the playoffs this year. There's a ton of, you know, forwards in that, but, yeah, not so much. Okay.
That's,
so
that said, I was going to say that said there, it is still a situation, and this might just be because the same teams won all the time, but, like, the Penguins team that didn't have Letang remains, like, the only one that didn't have that one.
Well, they had Chad Ruedel, Greg. I mean, Jesus Christ.
and Ian Cole playing 28 minutes a night. But, like, everybody else had, you know, either Keith or Doughty. I think Carlson has proven himself to be on an elite level, even though he was kind of poo-pooed last year. I just don't see that on Vegas, and it makes me a little bit nervous for them. I don't think Shea Theodore is quite there.
No, I agree.
Very good. All right, do you want me to do both? Montreal and Columbus?
No,
or?
You take Montreal, I'll take Columbus.
All right. I'm going to take Montreal then. I think Montreal could use some offense, so I'll just take Leon Draisaitl.
So you're just picking exclusively members of the Edmonton Oilers.
That's right.
Is that right?
That's, I mean, there's no better strategy for winning.
It's worked out great.
Yeah, this draft is like choosing a new GM. It's only Edmonton Oilers players need apply.
All right, I'm gonna pick a defenseman here, and I like Columbus's defense pretty good, but I think they need one more guy, and a guy who can make that horrible power play a little bit better. Young man out of Buffalo, New York, run by the name of Rasmus Dahlin.
Oh, man. So you are going to take the purebred rookie, a person who can't even legally take a drink in this country yet.
Yes.
And putting him on a team and expecting him to perform in on the biggest stage of the year?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. All right, so I think Ryan goes again, right? Because you're
St. Louis, Greg.
Oh, I am now St. Louis.
Everybody down.
We're moving. Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's going to blow my entire
strategy.
This
is really confusing.
Can
you still be St. Louis? Because I had a pick for Carolina.
5 seconds putting together.
For Christ's sake, yeah, I'll be St. Louis. Sure, they. they also need, a defenseman, and I'm going to say, do they? This is a tough one. Yeah, I'll stick with the defenseman for them, and I'll go Hampus Lindholm.
Yep.
All right, Carolina. So your defense is fine. I don't.
They need a forward. You want to talk about a team that needs a forward? Jeez.
Do I need a forward?
I think we.
Or do
or
I?
I know,
goalie,
I know who's coming on this pick. I've already got him written down, don't mess me up now.
And what was funny was that I was going to pick Lundqvist, because I'm like, oh my God, how great would it be to see Henrik Lundqvist get a shot in the playoffs? I'm like, what the fuck am I talking about? John Gibson's going to be the goalie for the Carolina Hurricanes in the playoffs. of the Anaheim Ducks, by the way, John Gibson.
That's right.
To put a cherry on it.
Very good. All right.
Sean goes to Nashville.
I mean, you could make a case for Nashville taking a goalie, but I'm not going to do that. I think they need the help up front, and
right. So this is obviously Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Come on,
Milan Lucic.
Yes. Sasha Barkov. Just a really good player who hasn't been picked yet.
See, I don't want to give away any future picks here, but, like, would you, if you were looking to create a second scoring line for Nashville, which I think is a primary need, would you maybe go Claude Giroux before you go Barkov?
That could be an option. That could also be an option. I just feel like Barkov's
playoff so good
guy.
Too.
I mean, that's the guy that you want. And but yeah, Giroux will get taken at some point, probably fairly soon.
All right, so Ryan gets the Jets.
Another team that needs a fucking defenseman. Jesus. Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
That's a good choice.
If we're
saying Arizona's out of the mix.
Which we are, apparently.
Yeah.
And I think rightly so, but, you know, stranger things have happened.
The Pittsburgh Penguins. Now, this is your classic conundrum. Of do you go defensive depth because they obviously could use it, or do you get that third line center that has, I mean, they have Bukes, but I don't care. Like, it's, you could, there's a lot of centers that you could add to this team and make them really good, but they probably need help on D. So my question is do I go Giroux here, or do I go Ryan Suter here? That's my boggle. And I think I'll go Ryan Suter. Fuck it. I'll go Giroux. Offense is the name of the game for the Penguins. They've proven in the past that with an overwhelming offense and three great scoring lines, they can overcome a shitty defense. I will go Claude Giroux, switching colors, joining the NWO, and playing on the same line as Sidney
Crosby.
That's
got to be the tiebreaker, is that this would make Philadelphia fans
lose
insane.
Their minds.
So, that's right. I mean,
Philadelphia fans for sure, but also Yins know we don't need Claude Giroux on the team to win the cup.
Yeah.
Yins know that.
Right up until game 7 overtime when Giroux just buries one behind Matt Murray and rips off his Penguins jersey.
That's right.
And storms off the ice and they build a statue of him right next to the Rocky. All right, I'm up next.
Sean,
I got
San Jose.
I am taking. Well, actually, you know, I was talking to Doug Wilson, and he was telling me he's pretty sure they're okay in net. You know,
yeah, they're fine.
If only there had been some way they could have traded for a goaltender at some point a few weeks ago. Right. I'm going to kind of take a page out of Greg's book, and I'm going to go Henrik Lundqvist and figure that he's got a great playoff run in him.
Bringing the average age of the Sharks down.
Yeah, yes. A youth movement. Exactly.
Shrewd move. The New York Islanders, Ryan.
Yeah, the Islanders, oh boy, they could use help everywhere. Maybe not in net. That's not fair to them.
I mean, and the middle is whatever. Yeah, I mean, let's process of elimination. Obviously don't need a goalie, and obviously don't need anybody on the best fourth line in the NHL.
Yeah, sure. How about this one? Elias Pettersson.
Yep.
Whoa. I like it. It's a good one. Not a bad choice at all. The fucking Leafs. Yet another team that needs a defenseman. Let's see here. Oh, all right. Let's do this. Because I think this is a move that they should make anyway at some point. I'm going to go once again, rings in the room. Experience where it counts. Duncan Keith.
Yep.
Oh, Greg. No. So bad this year.
Can I just point out that if this draft was a real thing, that is 100% the player that the Leafs would wind up with, is Duncan. Like, Mike Babcock would straight arm Kyle Dubas out of the way on the way to the podium.
Had him on Team Canada. Good guy. Good grit. Plays a lot of minutes.
Man. All right, Sean, you're up with the Washington Capitals.
So, I mean, again, like, if this is probably a case where you'd maybe think defense, but I don't love a lot of the defensemen who are still out there and available. So I'm going to make what might be a bit of a weird pick, because I feel like in terms of forwards, there's some other guys still out there that would be all right. But this team scores a lot. I want a two-way guy, and I'm going to take. Can I take Sean Couturier?
Sure you can.
Oh,
sure
you can. Certainly can.
Drop him in as Sean the third line and just...
Yeah. And then you get, like, Lars Eller as your fourth line center. That's a pretty fucking deep group.
Because he was
That's
fantastic
not the
in the playoffs last year. And I, you know, beat up a little bit, but I like the idea of just having him anchor that third line and then telling the other guys to just go out and score. Because that's how coaching works.
That's right. Well, for the Boston Bruins, obviously they need some help up front. And while he's had a little bit of a down year this year, I think reigning MVP Taylor Hall kind of helps them shore up that wing depth that everybody always complains about.
Coming off the injury? Is he still injured? Is he healthy enough to play?
We're just assuming, like, everybody here is good to go.
Okay. Well, that's something we probably should have established earlier.
you want me? Okay.
Yeah. We wouldn't want this to feel unrealistic.
Yeah.
This scenario right. where people are drafting.
I'll change it up here. Okay. Give me a second here. A winger. Help them. Alex DeBrincat.
Yep, that's a good one.
All right. Hey, Ryan, who is currently Calgary's second line center?
Is it
exactly? Exactly.
Well, I'm saying, so, what do you consider their second line, right? Because
the 3M line. I mean, I still consider really the 3M line to be like a third line, but you know.
So yeah,
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, the 3M line's. It's not completely intact anymore, but you know, it's great. So
we
answer
need a center
is Michael
here.
Backlund.
We need a center here. All right, so here are my choices. My choices for a center are Eichel. I think he's still on the board, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
I could go Getzlaff, or I could go Kopitar.
You know, Kopitar. just to, a quick reminder here, it is 2019, so maybe not those last two.
All right, I'll take Jack Eichel and assume that the overwhelming joy he'll feel of finally getting into a playoff series will be propelling him to a Conn Smythe performance. I'm All sorry, right. I meant to say Jack Eichel in Tim Murray parlance.
Very good. All right, so I'm up last with the Lightning.
The Tampa Bay Lightning.
Ooh, a lot of holes in this this
what
roster.
What do you get the girl that already has everything?
Well, in a way, this is like the Lightning are an easy team to draft for because you don't have to really worry about positions or anything. You just grab the best player.
Best available.
In theory, you could. And the one guy that's kind of jumping out at me hasn't been picked yet. I'm sure there's a few others I'm not thinking of, but Dylan Larkin kind of seems like he would be a guy, but I'm not picking Dylan Larkin. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to kind of overthink and get into the spirit of this, and I'm going to say that the only thing that scares me if I'm the Lightning and I'm trying to talk myself into a weakness on this team is I look around and we've got all the talent, but geez, do we know how to win? Do we know if things start to go bad, are we going to have someone in that room who can stand up and set us straight? And is there a guy out there who's having a really good year, who's captained multiple Stanley Cup winners?
Yeah, that's
and
exactly
I'm taking
who I was thinking,
Jonathan Toews to come in.
That's right.
And be my probably third line center, but also my leader to guide us to the Stanley Cup.
On the one hand, Steve Yzerman's leaving the organization. On the other hand.
Yeah.
The new Steve Yzerman is joining the organization. Is that what you're saying, Sean?
Yeah, I like it.
Right. Well, that was fun, Lambert. That was a good time. I appreciate it. Less fun was what happened to women's hockey this week. The Canadian Women's Hockey League folded. And the next 72 hours after that were filled with a lot of bullshit. The NWHL announcing it was going to put teams in Montreal and Toronto. The Montreal and Toronto CWHL franchises both being like, hold, slow your roll. The NWHL talking about a significant increase in funding from the NHL, which ended up being them moving money over from the other women's league to the one remaining women's league. The NHL getting pissed at me for talking about it being a significant investment, even though it was the NWHL's words. And again, coming back to the same problem once again, which is the idea that there should be only one league and that maybe the NHL should run it. And it was I talked about this on ESPN and Ice, the podcast with Emily as well. It was a really weird week because you had the same people saying the NHL should get the fuck out of women's hockey and should never run this league. The same people also saying, but how come they don't invest more? Like, I don't know what the relationship is right now.
It's a really weird thing that I find where, like, women's hockey fans, like, understandably, are like, please stop talking shit about women's hockey. And, you know, like, we don't want the NHL running things. But also, it's the NHL's job to support. Like, I kind of agree, but support also, it. Yeah. And so, like, I kind of agree with that, but also it's like, that does kind of sound like you really want it both ways. Like, write us a check and then shut the fuck up. Like, it totally makes totally makes sense, but, like it makes sense in theory. In actual practice, if the NHL's like, we'll give you $2 million instead of, you know, the rounding error of $100,000.
Like, it's such a fucking paltry
fee. That's pathetic.
It's absolutely pathetic. Yeah. And the thing about it is, and I've talked to the league about this. Like, they're like, well, that's a pretty big investment. I'm like, but
compared to what?
What they always come back to is that we don't trust the model of these leagues to be successful. And I'm like, what's the model for success for hockey in Harlem? What's the model for success in any program that you fund that doesn't turn a profit but exists solely so you can grow the game, get new fans? That's essentially what these leagues are.
Think about what the WNBA is, right? Like, people think of it as being successful, but the only reason it exists is because there are foreign leagues that are willing to pay women several times more their WNBA salaries, and the NBA still totally funds the WNBA, right? And, like, obviously there aren't foreign leagues for women in hockey that are going to pay them millions of dollars and make it a viable job for them, but, you know, it does have to, like, there does have to be, just generally speaking, more funding for women's sports. Even if you go, I don't think, like, the fucking Arizona Coyotes were a charity case for 10 years. Nobody gave a shit.
The thing I want to say about that, though, but really, really quickly about the WNBA is, I don't know if you can call it a success, but I also know that the people that use it as an example, as sort of like an epitaph towards the women's hockey leagues about their existence, have probably never been to either an WNBA game or an NWHL or CWHL game. Margins are so fucking different for that basketball league versus what these hockey leagues do, where the Riveters literally play on the Devil's practice rink. Right. WNBA teams literally play inside of NBA arenas. Like, it is night and day the level of investment that it takes to run these two leagues. And the idea that we're going to even use the WNBA as any kind of fucking proxy for the women's hockey leagues is insane to me, but yet it keeps happening.
Well, again, like, the level of investment is insane, but that's only because the NBA made a commitment to fund it after, what, the 96 Olympics?
Yeah,
I want to say.
Yeah.
And the NHL has always just kind of been like, well, we don't want to play favorites, and it's like, like I said, it's a rounding error for any one NHL team to give them $100,000, right? If you're dividing it among 31 NHL teams, it's $3,200.
Jesus Christ.
We make way more than that on the Patreon in a month. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
It's $3,200. They spend more on that for, like, the renting the hotel conference rooms where they make their shitty roster decisions at the end of the year.
That's slightly less than what they paid Panic at the Disco, though, I think, to play the Stanley Cup final.
I bet Panic at the Disco got more than that.
I'm sure they did.
I'm going to do something here that I don't normally do because I'm trying to find a way to think optimistically about this story. And I'm going to give the NHL a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, only because they have spent the last few years advancing what I thought was a somewhat reasonable position, which is, as you guys said, they didn't want to pick sides. There were two leagues that were in at least some sense competing, and the NHL made it clear they didn't want to pick one or the other to be the winner. And now that we're down to one league, not in the way that we kind of hoped we would get there, but now that we're there, you know, it's only been a few days. And I'm not necessarily going to beat up the NHL too much for the $100,000 thing that came out a few days after, because I think there's still room for things to change and for, you know, maybe that was somebody's version of an initial, you know, just Band-Aid to slap on the question. But I think they need to do more, clearly. You know, I say that as someone, I understand the argument that, hey, this league is a business. They're not a charity. They don't have to give money away just because it makes people feel good and all of that. Even if you want to take that approach, it doesn't seem very hard to see the business case here. I mean, I've got a daughter who likes sports and likes hockey and couldn't care less about the NHL. And if there was a strong women's league for her to watch, she might watch that. And that might be what gets the foot in the door for her to then care about the NHL in a way that she doesn't.
Hold on, Sean. Are you saying the NHL is financially short-sighted in some ways?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know it's crazy. But at the same time, like, this is also a league that has all sorts of people who only think in terms of financial outcomes, and so I don't fully understand why they haven't jumped on this more. I'm sure it's complicated. I'm sure it's easy for me to sit here and say, well, they should, you know, the business case is blah blah blah, and the NHL is probably sitting there going like, dude, we have the business case. We've actually run the numbers. We're not just pulling them out of the air, and this is why maybe it doesn't work the way you think it does. But even then, I mean, we're talking about amounts that are so small, you know, even if it's a gamble, even if you think there's a 90% chance you're flushing the money away, if the 10% chance comes through and this turns out to be viable and just a way to raise the profile of the sport, it's going to be worth it because you're going to make that money back so many times over. I just can't see a scenario where it doesn't make any sense for the NHL to be more involved. I hope they do get there. I'm not going to beat them up too much for not jumping in immediately, especially after an announcement that seemed to catch everyone off guard. But I really hope that within not a very long time frame, we're having a different conversation about what the league is and isn't doing.
Two things. The first is that I know it's a dangerous statement to make that, like, you see the world differently when you have a daughter versus how you saw it before you had a daughter. I know that's kind of a thing that's sort of held against guys sometimes, but in my case, it's the truth in a lot of ways. And my kid's entry point to hockey was a Riveters game. Like, that was the first game that she went to, and it was the first time she gave a shit about the actual sport versus taking her to a stadium or an arena for another thing, and she's just more worried about what's on the Jumbotron. So, like, it helped me make her a hockey fan. So I think that, you know, that experience is something that can be replicated for other young girls without question. The other thing is that, and this is what baffles me about the fucking league, you know, The league uses these women's players in the All-Star game and creates hype.
Reluctantly, but yes.
Yeah, reluctantly, but they did. Creates hype for the skills competitions. Did they at any point put over the fact that they were professionals, that they were in current professional leagues? Like, they were national team players 90% of the references, and maybe 10% of the time, oh, by the way, she also plays for Minnesota. Like, that's a real problem for me when you have a chance to kind of elevate and promote these leagues, and then you kind of go to the Olympic thing instead, which is the epitome of fucking irony that this league decides to put over the Olympics before they do another professional hockey league, considering their stance on the fucking Olympics.
Yeah, that's right.
So anyways, all right. So I hope that the NWHL coming back next year, you know, maybe with one league down, things change. But again, like, I come back to the other thing about this week, which is the assumption that the women that were playing in the CWHL are going to go back and play for the NWHL when there is clearly a reason they left, I think is really presumptuous, and we'll see how it all shakes out. But I hope the NWHL is successful this season, because
I hope so too. But the other thing is, just, you know, let's keep in mind that we went from having, you know, a certain number of teams and organizations to fewer. And that means fewer jobs for not just players, but people who were working, coaching, front offices, the day-to-day running of teams. Like, a lot of people lost their jobs this week. And I know people, you know, can look at it and say, maybe this is going to be a good thing because we're going to get to a one league scenario. it still sucks for those people. And I think, like, let's also remember that even if this ultimately in the big picture ends up being a good thing for the women's game in general, it was just a really, really shitty week for a lot of people who put a lot of work into making something happen.
And this isn't the Alliance of American Football. This league has not been around for 30 seconds. Like, this league's been around for a while, and I also feel really bad for the fans that have dedicated their time and their energies and their passions to following the Inferno or following the Les Canadiens or whoever, that all of a sudden find not only those teams but also the entire league disappeared. So it sucked. What doesn't suck usually, though, is WrestleMania. The spotlight on the Immortals, I don't know what the fuck they're calling it these days, Ryan, but here's the thing. We decided to have a second reindeer game on the episode today in honor of WrestleMania. Right. It is the ultimate WrestleMania quiz constructed by me, Quizmaster Greg. Sean is so goddamn good at these quizzes. I don't even know what to think anymore. I didn't think he'd be good at any of them, but he's really good at all of them.
Streak on the line.
Yeah.
That's right.
By the way, Greg, is this going to be one of those quizzes where you give the answer away in the question if people are actually listening and paying attention?
We didn't talk about that. Oh my God, we didn't even talk about that. So thank you to the nothing warms my heart than to see how many people listen to this podcast based on the volume of tweets
apparently
that we saw
listen
from people
much more closely than I do.
Yeah.
Than any of us. Yeah.
In which Ryan gave away the answer to how many NCAA players are on the Leafs this season. In the NCAA hockey quiz from last episode, gave away the answer to the question not in the question, as many people pointed out, but in your comments about the question.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Which was the problem. The reason I succeed in these quizzes is I'm so laser focused that as soon as I hear my just mind goes into supercomputer mode, and I stripped out the chatter, which I should not have done because that included the actual answer.
Picture that gif of Zach Galifianakis from The Hangover with all the math equations floating around his face, and that's Sean
every time
he does one of these quizzes. All right, this is the ultimate WrestleMania quiz. Sean, since you are reigning quiz champion, you get to receive the kick or kick off, if you'd like, on this first question. Would you like the first question? It's an 8-question quiz. There is a tiebreaker.
Right.
You want the first question or give the first question to Ryan?
Okay, I'm going to take the first question. I'm going to put the pressure on Ryan. I want him to be returning serve, and
I
think
like
I'll just wear him down.
Mm. That's why
mentally.
You're known as the Yvonne Lendl of podcasting.
Sure.
For decisions like that.
Why not?
Sean, who wrestled in the most WrestleMania matches?
Is this a multiple choice? Or is this a...
No, it's not.
This is a... Okay,
this is,
all right.
This is a... Uh-huh.
This is... You know what? I actually do know the answer to this one. And it's somewhat surprising. Maybe not. No, I don't think it's surprising. I believe that the answer to this is The Undertaker.
That is correct. The Undertaker has wrestled in 24 WrestleMania matches. Of course, famous for the streak. And probably the reason you got that correct is because you yourself are on an Undertaker-like streak.
That's right.
In these quizzes.
Ryan is attempting to become the one in 2-1. And it's I don't think it's going to happen.
My client, Ryan Lambert.
I wish I was represented by Paul Heyman, dude. That would kick ass.
That would be fantastic.
All right.
By the way, how weird is it that like Paul Heyman for years has been Brock Lesnar's like on-screen manager? And then we find out that he apparently actually does handle his business.
It's
like
kind of crazy,
with
right?
Him in UFC.
So cool.
Like, what? They know that this is fake, right? Like, they don't.
It's all
have
kayfabe,
to...
dude. Everything's kayfabe. It's so good.
It's like whenever they put like a two people together as like an on-screen romantic couple, they always inevitably like break up with their
get
spouses.
Together.
But at least that, like, you can kind of see where that goes. Like I feel like someone needs to pull Brock Lesnar aside and be like, you don't have to hire that guy to negotiate your $1 million UFC deal.
Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar, a real Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone of wrestling, co-stars who became involved. Also, I want to point out that I'm old enough to remember when he was Paulie Dangerously in WCW. And while Jim Cornette had the racket, loaded tennis racket gimmick, Paulie Dangerously had the loaded 1980s sized cell phone gimmick.
That's right.
Where he would hit people with the cell phone.
The problem is this, Greg. All of us are old enough to remember that.
I'm old enough to remember when Paul Heyman had, well, he didn't have hair.
No, never in his life.
Ryan.
Yeah.
Who has the most WrestleMania losses amongst wrestlers? See,
and this is why Shawn wins. He gets the fucking layup, the tap in. Everybody knows the Undertaker had the most. Everybody fucking knows that.
It couldn't have been
Shawn Michaels. First of all, they're both of them had their WrestleMania debuts at WrestleMania 7. Shawn Michaels with the Rockers. I believe they fought Haku and the Barbarian.
I'm simply saying that maybe the questions will even out at some point.
Maybe redirect
your energy into answering the question at hand instead of complaining about the structure of the quiz.
Well,
Most WrestleMania losses.
Most WrestleMania losses. I'm going to say...
Come on now.
Mick Foley? No, there's no way. That's stupid. Bad answer. I immediately regret it.
The answer, of course, is The Game, The King of Kings.
Is it really Triple H?
Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Triple H, 11 losses in his career.
Wow. I would not have got that.
Maybe choker, dude.
Maybe heading into 12 with his match against Drax the Destroyer.
Wow.
Sean, next question. This is a multiple choice one.
Make it an easy one just because I want to see Ryan just lose it. I just want to see the...
Sean, fill in the blank. Blank mania. No. Which of these...
You gotta love it.
Sean, which of these wrestlers is undefeated at WrestleMania? A, Terry Funk. B, Rob Van Dam. C, the Big Boss Man. Or D, Rey Mysterio Jr.?
Oh, jeez.
So it's Terry Funk, Rob Van Dam, the Big Boss Man from Cobb County, Georgia, or Rey Mysterio Jr.
Holy smokes. Man. This will be a guess. All right. Give me the list one more time. Funk?
Terry Funk from the Cross Ranch in Amarillo, Texas. Rob Van Dam. I don't know where he's from. Big Boss Man from Cobb County, Georgia. And Rey Mysterio, who I assume is from Mexico.
He's from the 619, Greg.
Oh, shit,
San Diego.
Right.
Yeah, jeez. All right. So give me this. This is a total guess. Give me Rob Van Dam.
That's correct.
Is it really?
Did you know that, Ryan? Were you actually? Yep.
Rob Van Dam, Mr. Monday Night, 4-0 in WrestleManias. That is correct. So Sean
isn't it wild that he was in four WrestleManias?
It's kind of strange, right?
It's weird.
All right. So, Ryan, good news for you, buddy. This is also multiple choice.
Yeah.
How many wins at WrestleMania does Vince McMahon have? A0, B1, C2, D3. So it's 0, 1, 2, or 3 wins.
I guess I'll go with 2.
I'm sorry, the answer is 0. Vince McMahon has never won a WrestleMania match.
I should have known that, because the heel never goes over at WrestleMania. I should have fucking known that. That was stupid.
Now I've seen this before on Game Show Friday, where you're in the death spiral. You're in your own head.
This is exactly what I wanted by taking the...
oh my god! Right, by receiving the kick. This is what you've done.
This is fantastic.
Sean, which wrestler won the World Heavyweight title?
I feel like I should just like project like some worms onto the middle of the ring to play further mind games with Ryan here.
Fucking Bray Wyatt, this sucker. Sean, which wrestler won the World Heavyweight title most times at WrestleMania?
Which one is the World Heavyweight?
Like, the big belt.
The WWE title, right?
The one we give a shit about.
We're not counting, like, we're not rolling in all the other...
Right. This is the World Heavyweight title, according to the trivia question that I found online.
Right.
Who won it the most times at WrestleMania?
All right, and is this a multiple choice by any chance?
No, it's clearly not.
All right, so my first thought is Hogan, but he headed for most of the time.
Oh, I'm trying to think. Fucking logic.
So let me just work my way through. Okay,
I like it
because he seems like the obvious answer, but he would have won it. Let's see, once, twice,
three times, and maybe
three times. I feel like he won it three times. So has anybody won it more than three times?
Ryan, you have this one?
I have one pretty good. I have a pretty good feeling about who the answer is. I'll tell you if it.
Do you want to give away the answer and see if Sean's paying attention?
No. Oh, I get it. Okay. All right. Okay.
All right. Okay. I'm continuing to think through here. Not the Undertaker, even though he's won the most matches.
In Bruce Pritchard's parlance on those podcasts, he says he doesn't need the belt. The Undertaker,
yep. Right?
Definitely doesn't.
Could it be Triple H? No, he loses. Right? If he's the guy who has lost the most, would it be Austin? I don't think Austin stuck around long enough. So
what's your guess there, buddy?
You know what? I'll say Hulk Hogan. I don't know if anyone's won it more than three.
The answer, Ryan, who's your guess?
My guess was going to be John Cena, Rapidoo himself.
That is correct. It is John Cena. Good. Four that's times.
Good. Okay.
The face that runs the place won the belt. So the door is ajar. There is the chance now for a rally.
Cue the comeback.
And we go to this question, which I believe is one that is manageable. And maybe on the needle that goes between hard and easy, the needle is pointed more towards E on this one. Ryan, which wrestler main evented WrestleMania the most? Get out of your own head. Think clearly. I hear that sigh. Don't overthink it. That's correct.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan main evented WrestleMania 8 times, the most for any wrestler. So the door is now open.
Do you know who number two is?
I have no idea.
Okay.
And I don't know who number two works for either. So Ryan has one.
It's not a bad reference.
Sean has two. And so we kick it back to Sean for question number seven. The best that Ryan could hope for is a tie. Sean could deliver the knockout blow here. This is a very tough question. And the door will be open. And I will tease that the final question for Ryan is multiple choice. This one is not. Sean, which wrestler lost two different championships at the same WrestleMania? Came in with two belts.
Yep.
Lost them both.
I remember this happening at a pay-per-view. I don't remember if it was WrestleMania.
It could be like but in your was, house, Vader time.
No, this was if I'm thinking right, this was a pay-per-view. It was like a triple threat match. Somebody came in with two belts, and it was one of these. They did two matches for
Holy
each belt.
Shit.
The person,
I think
both guys, and the two other guys pinned each other.
You might have it.
And the guy who lost both belts was Kurt Angle.
Holy shit!
Did I get it?
You got it.
That was WrestleMania. Yeah, and it was Jericho and was it Benoit?
It was Benoit. WrestleMania 2000, Kurt Angle, two-fall triple threat match for the WWF Intercontinental and European Championships. Benoit, the IC title, and Chris Jericho, the European title. Motherfucker,
holy
look at
smokes.
That.
Made me earn that one. All right.
All right, Ryan, to close it out, this would have been such a great question to have a tiebreaker on or a tie on. Which one of these celebrities did not appear at WrestleMania? Kim Kardashian, Jay Leno, Alex Trebek, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I think it's Arnold.
Arnold Schwarzenegger appeared in a video intro for Triple H's match versus Sting at WrestleMania 31.
Oh, that's right.
The answer is actually Jay Leno, who, of course, was...
WCW.
WCW. He did not come over when Vince bought WCW.
Yeah, he was always the guy at, what, Hog Wild? Am I right about this?
Well, as you know, Ryan, he tagged with Diamond Dallas Page in a tag team match against Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff Road Wild. Not
I think
Hog,
it started as Hog Wild, and then they changed it.
And then they changed it because it was a dumb name.
Well, they did it at the biker rally in Sturgis.
That's right. Now it's all coming back to you.
What was the tiebreaker question, if I may ask?
Are you curious about that?
Yeah, I am.
All right, let's roll with it then. Who can name more winners from WrestleMania 1? It was going to be a Schlemcode style showdown between you two.
Oh, I can't. I definitely can't. I don't know anything about.
All you'd have to do is name a wrestler that wrestled in the mid 80s, and you might have a shot. Anybody want to take a shot?
I could have gotten a few of these. All right, so Hogan and Mr. T won the main event.
You stop. That's true. That's the winner. Okay. Go ahead, Ryan.
All right.
Oh wait, we're just doing winners from.
Yep,
that,
these are just
right?
people that won the matches.
Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Okay, back to Sean.
It must have been WrestleMania 1 where they did the King Kong Bundy squash in like 5 seconds over.
That
like,
is correct.
Back when like jobbers still got to be in WrestleMania.
Bundy went over. That's true, Ryan.
The Macho Man Randy Savage.
Incorrect. No. Yeah. Tito Santana, King Kong Bundy, Ricky Steamboat, Junkyard Dog,
JYD himself. Yeah,
Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff, Andre the Giant, Wendy Richter, of course, the women's champion. And then Hogan and Mr. T. Please do recall that Brutus Beefcake and David San Martino went to a double disqualification.
All right. Yeah, we all remember that one.
All right. Well, our Raider games took up so much time. We'll just get to the question of the week, which is, of course, we asked you, the listeners to Puck Soup, to give us your least valuable players for the 2018-19 season. Alex Fabili wrote in, Vlad Sobotka, probably maybe Tage Thompson. This was also the least valuable players for either specific teams or for the league themselves. Larissa says, I've been told I'm not allowed to complain about how awful Ryan Callahan is compared to his contract because of how good the Lightning are, and then gave the arms crossed emoji to indicate that she is displeased with Ryan Callahan. Adrian Messini writes in one that had been written in many times by a lot of people. Tobias Reeder. Zero goals so far. Obviously, the reason why the Oilers did not make the playoffs, according to Bob Nicholson. Karen Milans writes in, Corey Schneider, terrible when the Devils needed him, stealing games when the rest of the team is in tank mode. So, once again, this happened, I believe, in the Austin Matthews draft year, too, where the Devils were supposed to be dog shit, and then Corey Schneider propped them up to keep them away from drafting highly that year, if memory serves. A lot of Islanders fans saying Andrew Ladd, a lot of Predators fans, including Sage Gunner 47 saying it has to be Kyle Turris. It just hasn't happened for him at all. A couple of Wings fans saying Justin Abdelkader, which is a common rejoinder. And, that was a lot of the same names popping up over and over again. Anybody on your radar for being least valuable to their team this season?
And Connor McDavid, the Oilers out of the lottery again.
I would go Martin Jones. I feel like he's the guy 100%. Keeping the Sharks from being like Tampa West
juggernaut. So. Yep, absolutely.
I like that. That seems to be that maybe that would be my choice too. Would be Martin Jones. It's a good point. It'd have to be a goalie. It's of some ilk. I would imagine. And I hate to dump on like Luongo and Reimer, but maybe they could team up a la the Jennings Trophy and win the LVP for submarining the Florida Panthers.
Or
this season.
Or if you're in Toronto, it's the obvious answer is Garrett Sparks, who as a backup goalie has been like 5 goals worse than Curtis Mikkelhenny would have and is the entire reason that the Leafs don't have home ice in the playoffs.
But a well-liked guy with the Marlies, so he doesn't get a lot of criticism, right?
Yeah, anything that goes wrong, even though he's not going to play in the playoffs, it's still his fault if they lose.
Well, there you go. Well, all right. Well, so apologies to that reader, that listener who always complains about us doing too much wrestling.
The worst time of year you could possibly complain about that. Our bonus episode next week is we're just going to talk about WrestleMania for an hour and a half or whatever.
It's like someone going on the Reddit and saying, God, I hate Thanksgiving, right before the like
the November 25th
episode. So apologies to you. I'm Greg Wyshynski. You can read my stuff at ESPN.com. You can also watch me every day on a show called Daily Wager on ESPN News. It's a TV show. I have stuff in my house that puts me on the TV, and I make hockey bets. And so far, I'm doing quite well. Surprisingly. So do check that out. And if nothing else, if you're not someone who bets, it's always good information for that night's games. And you can listen to my other podcast, ESPN and Ice, as well.
Oh, hey. check out the Puck Soup newsletter. It's on the Patreon. It's $4 a month if you just want the newsletter. It's $3 a month if you're already getting the $5 bonus episodes. And it's good. People like it. I did some insider stuff last week that ended up being right about Adam Fox.
Nice.
Nobody must credit Ryan Lambert. Nobody got that memo.
E4, Ryan Lambert.
And I was right, so that's fine. And then sports.yahoo.com/author/Ryan-Lambert.
There it is.
You can find my stuff at The Athletic, including this week where I wrote my my tribute to the departing, retiring Bob Cole, who, if you're Canadian, has pretty much been the voice and the soundtrack to a big, huge chunk of your hockey memories. And if you liked and appreciated his work, check it out. And if you didn't, please also check it out, because I have some thoughts directed at you as well. Yeah, and follow me on Twitter, Down Goes Brown, all that
stuff. Please do read Sean's piece, and then remember it when I write mine about Doc Emrick one day, because it'll probably be very similar.
Just cut and paste. It's fine.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to Pucks. We'll catch you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Later.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.